Okay, welcome back, guys. This section is going to be on multimedia. Do you see the font? Do you recognize the font from anywhere? Maybe a movie? Because there's going to be a certain theme. Maybe you'll catch it, maybe you won't, going through this PowerPoint. Maybe it's an inside joke, but anyway, here's our agenda. So computer displays, images and graphics, audio, video, and then some things I consider more on the fun side. Gaming, and I guess the DRM. Cool, so let's start talking about computer displays. As Dan mentioned, like your computer screen can be thought of as a grid of thousands of pixels, like tiny little dots. A pixel is a small square cell in this grid, a dot, since it's so small, you might as well call it that. And it looks, you can sort of imagine it like this, but like scaled way down, and there's a lot more of them. And they, oops, sorry. And then they represent color. So they have some sort of data to represent color. So yay, this is a happy face made out of really, really big pixels, I guess, if you want to think about it that way. But each of those pixels on screen is made out of like a lot of like small real pixels, which I guess if you stand up close, you can sort of see them, but yay. So you can think of pixels and your computer display sort of as an enhanced LED sign. What do I mean by LED sign? Well, you know those road signs you see with those like dots of lights that sort of light up and tell you, give you some sort of message, sort of like this one, except this one says, caution, zombies ahead. Someone actually like hacked into this little sign and, you know, tweaked the message a bit. This happened in Texas. You can probably go look it up. It's pretty funny. I was totally like, yeah, go hacker. Anyway, yeah. So you sort of think of them as these sort of LED signs, except much more advanced. Like all the little dots are a lot smaller. And you can have more than just that one color. Yay, so moving on to pixels and color. As I sort of hinted at before, and Dan said, pixels store color information. So the type that we focused on is RGB, but there are other types like one that starts with like CMYK, I think. But the main one is usually RGB, so it's just one type. There are other types. And this is described in bits, or bit depth. So an example of this, because I think Dan went over it pretty well, is you could have like 8-bit color, 16-bit color, 24-bit color. What does this mean? Why does it matter? Well, say you had 8-bit color, right? That means one pixel has 8 bits to represent color. So if you have 8 bits, and each bit can represent 1 or 0, then how many colors can you represent? I'll give you guys that one, because you know, I've sort of been talking about it a lot, but 2 to the 8, so 256 distinct colors if you have 8-bit color. 8 bits to represent color, you can have 256 colors. That sounds like a lot, but, well, I mean, I'm sort of an artist, so I like all the colors I can get, and 256 isn't, in my opinion, all that much. So, say we move up to 24-bit depth, and that's where the pixel has 24 bits to represent color, or 3 bytes for each color, each of the RGB colors. So that, using the same mathematical operation, gives you 16.7 million distinct colors. Yeah! So yay, demo time! Using Photoshop? Wait, no, we're using Paint for this one. So first off, I'm going to sort of show you what I mean by everything's made out of pixels. So I'm going to zoom in really, really close here. And then I'm going to use the pencil tool here. And as you can see, whenever I click anywhere, you get this square, presumably a pixel. So if I start trying to draw something, like I'm not really sure what I'm going to draw, but let's draw a happy face. So if I'm drawing a happy face, you can sort of see that the squares fill in, you know, the white space. So it's not like a nice curved line. It's made out of little tiny squares or cells on a grid, i.e. pixels. So that's just sort of to show you, you know, how I guess images is represented at this moment in our talk. And that's because I'm zoomed in very close. Let's see if I can zoom out. What do you know?
Also the bottom right-hand corner.
So if we zoom out, you can sort of see that we can sort of see how they might form a smooth line, the pixels. Yes, and then I also wanted to show you the difference between like a lot of color and not that much color. Six. Okay, so this is a JPEG right here. You can sort of see it's pretty looking with all its colors and things look pretty smooth, I'd hope. And then I put this into Paint, or I can do that now if you guys want, but I did it beforehand. I stuck it into Paint, and then I saved it as a GIF, which tends to be like 8-bit color. So you can sort of see, where is this GIF? Here we go. You can sort of see all these little like dots here. All these, whereas in the original picture, those are different shades of like, say, yellow. Let's see if I can pull this over here. See all these different shades of yellow. Here we don't have that many shades of yellow because, you know, it's only like 8 bits of color information. So you can sort of see how the information or the image kind of gets degraded. Like it doesn't quite look as nice. Questions on the slide before? No? Okay. So to sort of recap, digital images and graphics as you saw, were made out of pixels. The ones I showed you were made out of pixels. But so these ones that were made out of pixels, as Dan mentioned, they're called raster or bitmap. And bitmap, not to be confused with like the bitmap image file format, but bitmap more as like it's a map of bits, like literally like little dots of color. So as Dan talked about, you can sort of see that if you have a raster image, if you zoom in very, very close, you can start to see the little pixels that make up the image. Like you'll see the, I can show you this right now, actually. Okay, let's do this correctly. So this is, here's a really big image. And then as far as I can tell, there's no like pixelation right now, but if I zoom in enough, let's zoom in over here. No, that looks gross. Let's zoom in over here. If I zoom in enough, you can start to see, let's go right here, you can start to see all these little dots, all these little pixels that make up the image. So here's, I guess, another example of that. We have our zombie sign, and then here's it zoomed in. You can see all these little squares here that you weren't, like all these little extra squares here that you sort of don't really see in the bigger picture. Yay! So, opposite of the raster type, we have the vector type, which uses mathematical formulas to draw, I guess, if you want to call it that. And as such, you don't have pixelation when you zoom in or when you make it bigger. There's no reduction in quality. And here's an example I did on Photoshop, which I'll probably show you in a little bit. I made a circle, I made it bigger as a vector type and as a JPEG, like just a normal image. And you can probably guess which one was the JPEG and which one was, you know, like the vector type. So here for the vector type, you can see there's not like, you don't really see pixelation, whereas the raster type you see, you know, sort of not quite as sharp. The quality is not quite as nice. Yay, questions on that? Okay, so do you guys want to see me do this in Photoshop or? Okay, let's do it. Okay, so first I'm gonna create a new canvas. Wow, that's kind of short. So I'm just creating a place for me to like draw on and play around in. Let's make it 500 by 500. I'll talk more about what these numbers mean later. But so here, if you're not familiar with Photoshop, over here is my sort of toolbar. This is a very old version of Photoshop, like 2000. Wait, what versions do you guys use? No, I'm serious. Mine's really old. Look. Where is it? Version 6. Not CS6. Version 6. Where's the... Here we go. 1989. That's when I was born, to 2000. Compared to what is out now, like, they can do... This, like, Photoshop is so much more powerful with so many more tools if you get, like, not the super old version. So I'm going to draw an ellipse. And then we're going to zoom in really close. Really, really close. And then it looks all right, right? It's sort of neat, pretty clean. That's me, like, zooming in manually. What happens if I try to enlarge the circle? So in Photoshop, you can do that with this thing called Free Transform, which I've just clicked, and then now I can drag the circle, the box that the circle is in, and resize it that way. So I'm just going to make it really big here. And as you can sort of see, hopefully you can sort of see, things over here are starting to get sort of not so neat anymore, kind of blurry, kind of pixelated. We can zoom in and look at that if I apply the transformation. So yes, we're going to keep the circle that way. And then we're going to zoom in onto the edge so we can see. As you can tell, it's, you know, it looks okay, but there's a bit of, like, blurring. Maybe you think it's fine, but I'm going to show you the vector type, which will look much clearer and much sharper. So to do that, I'm going to, you know, do ellipse again. This time, I guess Photoshop here calls it a new shape layer, like a work path. But in essence, it creates, like, a vector type circle. Let's make this a different color so we can see better. Let's make it red. Ah, red is 255, yes. Okay. So let's make it there. I'm going to make it small and then make it bigger. Sorry. Okay. So I've made it small. Here it is. It's small. Now I'm going to make it bigger using the same trick before. Edit, free transform path. Drag it out really big. Whee. Okay, let's do big. Cool. And then I'm going to save that. Apply. Yes. Okay, I'm going to put these side by side, and I'm going to zoom in again, just so you can see the difference. Whee! So here's our vector type, very clean, very neat, and here's our raster type, which now in comparison, hopefully you can see, you know, the distortion, how, you know, pixelated or how blurry, how not quite as nice it looks compared to the vector type. Yay, so that was pretty much just a live demo of that right there, showing you that vector, yay, very sharp, very clean, very nice, and then raster, maybe not so much. So some of you might be wondering, okay, mathematical formulas, like what, you mean like 1 plus 2x equals something or something like that? Well, an example of what a formula might be is, say you want a formula for a circle, the algorithm might be something like, oh, I need some notion of a circle, so maybe this round thing or this thing without straight edges. And then it might need to know information like the radius, how wide or how big the circle is going to be, as well as the location of the center relative to, like, the page. And when it has, well, also if you're going to color it, what color the line should be in, what color the inside should be. And once it has this information, it can construct this circle. And then if you resize it or if you put it on a larger page, it can recalculate, you know, where the location of the center should be, how big the radius should be, and then redraw it, quote unquote. And with that, you know, it would make it nice and crisp as opposed to not so crisp. So you can sort of think of a vector type of it being sort of like a blueprint. So here, if I try to draw over the red circle, you'll see it won't let me. And it says, because the layer is not directly editable, i.e. The layer I'm on, for those who know a bit of Photoshop, is I'm on the vector type down here, and right here. And since I'm on it, and I'm trying to, like, paint over it with this paintbrush tool, and it's telling me that I can't do it. So that should sort of keep that in mind, because I'll go back to the slide and I'll explain what that means. But here I'm on the layer of our raster type, and I'm going to try to paint over this. And hey, what do you know? It lets me paint over this blue circle. Oh, that's weird. Why couldn't I paint over the red one? Sorry about that. Just to make it clear, different color. So I'm painting over the blue, but I can't do it over the red. Why? Well, remember how I said that for a vector type, it's sort of like a blueprint? So it has like instructions. It hasn't actually, if you want to think about it this way, laid down the pixels yet. So that's how it can be sharp. Like when you change your, if you change your vector type to a different file format, like a JPEG or something, it actually puts down those pixels. So if you were doing this in Photoshop and you wanted to edit your vector, you'd have to check this out. This is really cool when I found out. Right here, down here, on the vector layer right here, if you right-click it, you can rasterize it, or however you pronounce that. So if you do this, it becomes like any other, you know, raster, and I can now color over it, or, you know, edit it. So yeah, that's what I mean when I say you can think of a vector type sort of like a blueprint. Okay, so yeah, that's what I mean when I say it's like a blueprint. Things aren't totally laid out, you know, physically, I guess, if you want to think about it yet. You know, a blueprint contains the instructions, the house isn't actually built yet. It's like that. Cool, so just to recap, raster and or bitmap versus vector. So as I said before, and as Dan said, even a week before that, they're represented by actual pixels, literally a map of bits of color. And then for the vector type, it's represented by formulas, mathematical formulas, not like actual dots of color. But they can be changed into dots of color, as you saw with Photoshop, where you can rasterize a layer. And then for the raster, or the bitmap, if you resize it, i.e. zoom in, you get pixelation, quality loss. With vector, there's no reduction. Everything still looks sharp, very nice. The bitmaps are resolution dependent. I think I have the definition of resolution in a bit. And then conversely, a vector is resolution independent. So what is resolution? It is the degree of detail of an image. So that's just like the general description, because there are other types of resolutions. But for us, we're concerned more with like pixel resolution, which is, you know, generally the pixel count. Usually this is represented in two ways. You can do width times height. Always width times height, not like height times width, can be either that or it can be the total number of pixels in that image. So so for this total number, that's what Dan was referring to when he called an image like 10 megapixels or, you know, it's usually measured in like megapixels. So yeah, they're both pixel resolution, but just know that there are two different ways they may encounter it. So going back to our sort of summary of the two, bitmap generally used for photos, and vector types are generally used for logos, because you'd want to be able to resize your logo as big as you want or as small as you want. But since you have to do a lot of calculation, it might not be so good for photos, which have like a lot of color and a lot of lines, very detailed, very complex looking. It might not be such a good idea to have math for all of those lines and colors. Okay, so let's talk a bit more about resolution, i.e. the image and your screen. If your screen resolution equals your image resolution, you see the full image on all of your screen, i.e. you have a pixel by pixel match. So each pixel on the image corresponds with the pixel on your screen. And then logically, if the image is larger than the screen, you'll only see part of the image, and you'll have several screen pixels for one image pixel. And then conversely, if your screen is larger than the image, I think we come across this very often, you'll see parts of the screen as well as the whole image, and you'll have several image pixels for one screen pixel, if you want to think about it that way. Okay, so scaling. I was talking about zooming and all this stuff. What does that actually, like, what? Well, if you're zooming in, you're enlarging the image. You're making the pixels bigger, as you can sort of tell. As I made an image, as I zoomed in, you can see, like, the squares get bigger. And then zooming out is the opposite. You're shrinking the image, shrinking your view of the image currently. Like, all of this doesn't do anything unless you save the image. So, conversely, zooming out makes the pixel smaller. And then I liked how Dan talked about there's this notion of using software to enhance images by zooming in. Okay, let's hope sound works.
Magnify that death sphere. Why is it still blurry?
That's all the resolution we have. Making it bigger doesn't make it clearer.
It does on CSI Miami.
Ugh.
Yay, hopefully you guys caught that. Hopefully the color wasn't too bad. But basically, that was from Futurama, a little clip where, can't remember the captain's name, but he wanted to zoom in on the Death Sphere, Death Star maybe? He wanted to zoom in on that, he wanted to enhance it, and they zoomed in, and it was still, like, pixelated. And he was like, what the heck, what? I want to see where their battlements are, I want to see where the weak point is. And his little alien sidekick is like, yeah, zooming in doesn't, like, you only have that resolution, you can't get more data. And then the captain ironically says, but it works on CSI Miami. It must work in real life, right? So not quite the case. I just thought it was a fun little thing going off of what Dan said in class about, you know, all these techie shows getting things wrong. It's always fun to see them do that. But yeah, don't be fooled. Okay, so we talked about scaling. There's also this thing called sharpening. So I'm not going to go into it too much because it's a lot of math and I don't like math that much. But there are these neat computer algorithms. I think a lot of them are like filters. You don't need to know this. And I'll show you a demo in a little bit with Photoshop again, our little friend, of how what it looks like when you're sharpening something. But well, maybe I should do that now. Let me actually open this edges. Open with Photoshop. So here's edges that I showed on the other screen. Let's, in Photoshop, like I said, they usually call these things filter. You can blur things, or you can sharpen them, and you can do a whole lot of other cool things with them. But I'm going to show you sharpen. So here, I'm going to sharpen. Do you guys notice anything changing? I keep sharpening. Well, now I've sharpened a ridiculous amount, so now it looks silly. But did you guys notice how the edges got sharper? There was more contrast between, like, I'm looking right here, and sort of how there's more contrast between the black and the white. Yay! And then I should also show you guys blur. So let's undo all that sharpening. And here's another filter, blur. Just click blur, and then I'm going to keep doing it. I guess you can't really see it unless I zoom in. Okay, let's keep doing it. I guess it's hard to tell, but that was the original, and this is the super blurry version. You can sort of see how things do get sort of smudged or, like, not as crisp looking. So as I said, I wasn't going to go too much into the detail of how they do that, but an idea would be for sharpening, you increase the contrast between, like, neighboring pixels. So if you have a body of, like, red, your neighboring pixel is, like, the same, so you wouldn't really increase the contrast there. But if you saw, like, black and white, the two neighboring pixels are different colors, and you increase the contrast, then, you know, you'll make that line sort of pop out more distinct, at least. My understanding of their algorithm. Adobe Photoshop 6, not CS 6 or 5. So maybe they've got better algorithms now, but yeah. And then I showed you guys blurring because I didn't want to switch back and forth. But also, you can do something like blurring. Dan didn't talk about this. So I thought I'd throw this in for fun. You can blur things. I guess this is more for, like, because I can sort of see how sharpening would be maybe a good tool to use if you had some photos that were blurry and you wanted to sharpen them. Blurring could be, in my opinion, more for artistic effect. But yeah, there's just, you can blur too. It softens the image. Algorithm might be like you average the pixels by the edges. So you find the pixels by the edges and you sort of average their numbers so that they look softer. They look kind of not quite as sharp. Okay, moving on. Wow, time is going fast today. Compression! Let's talk about lossless compression as opposed to lossy compression. So lossless is when you compress it, you can get the original back out. Like you haven't lost any data at all. It's exactly like the original. And an example that Dan gave us in class was run length encoding for GIFs. So he showed you those two flags, and I wanted to give you another example, not the flags, because you've already seen that, but say I had one line of pixels of black text on white. So W is white, B is black, and this is just one line, so you don't see letters or anything. For run length encoding, it would probably store that line up there as something like 11W, yes, I counted, 1B, 10W. So if you count each of those, that's how many times it occurs. And then when it wants to, I guess, unencode or get the original image out, you would just, you know, put down 11 W's, one black, 10 W's, and so forth. And you would get the exact original. Like, you didn't lose anything. Yay! That could be good. Space-wise, if you have a really big image, that might be a problem. But moving on, its counterpart, lossy, which, conversely, throws some data away. Usually this they do it intelligently so you don't actually notice too much. Like back in the day, it was, in my opinion, easier to notice, but now it's pretty hard for me to notice like any quality loss when you throw the data away. But as Dan mentioned, they do this in blocks, or I'm gonna call them patterns. And then just a bit of cool information maybe, they do this with something called discrete cosine transform. Basically, they have all these like patterns, or blocks, I guess if you want to call them that, and they sort of, they break the image up into blocks, and then they see which one it matches. Like, they sort of put a weight of these patterns. So maybe it's like 50% looking like this, and like 40% looking like something else up there. But bottom line is, they use these block patterns sort of reduce the image, like the block of image they're looking at. So yeah, that's extra information. I thought that was cool. So that's sort of how JPEG, you know, does that compression. After it does this, it's lossy. You can't recover the original. So be sure to save those and work on copies. And then you might also see lossy artifacts or telltale signs that this image isn't the original. Dan showed you a very extreme version of this where you saw like blocks and like chunks of color missing. Just wanted to remind you guys. Here's that chart again that Dan had. Do you guys have questions on this? On this chart that he showed, and he was like, "Oh, here are a few like file formats: JPEG, GIF, PNG." And their raster or vector, and then their compression type, and their normal bit depth, and whether or not they're transparent. He had an alpha thing, that's an alpha column. That's the same thing as transparency. If we don't have any questions on this, I wanted to add that you can also have animation. So here's a little animation I made from a video game, from images of a video game when I was younger, because I like that little character. But that's basically just a whole bunch of images put together to run over and over again. If you guys want, I can sort of show you. Well, maybe we'll do that at the end. But I guess you should probably take my word for it, unless you like stay after class and I'll open up Image Ready and show you that it's actually image by image. You know, just a whole bunch of images running together. Yay! So here are some audio formats. They have some of the same properties as as the image formats. You know, there's compression types. I just made some notes over here about, you know, who tends to use this and why they're notable. So here's MP3. Well, I'm sure you guys already know what this sounds like, but I have a corresponding MIDI to. Kudos to those who know where this is from, but that's what the MP3 sounds like. And here's someone's rendition, here's the same song, but in MIDI. You can sort of see it's different. But be assured, they are the same song. And what I mean by the same song is they're both from a video game, and there's only this one room that has this song, and those are the two file format, like different, the same song with different file formats. Yay, could you tell the difference? Here's where that theme part comes in. Why the font in the beginning? Okay, tough crowd, I guess. So, I also have examples of WAVE versus MP3. So WAVE is uncompressed. It's uncompressed, so it's not lossy or lossless. But it tends to be really big, so its uses are more for things that are short and high quality, like you know, the sounds on your computer, if you have a PC. I don't know what Macs do. But if the sounds on your computer, like when you shut it off, it makes that little tune. That's probably a WAVE. You can actually check on your computer, which, if you want, I can show you. But I guess we should listen to this. Wow, it's loud. Okay. And then if you listen to the MP3, no, I'm gonna click it. Okay, it didn't want me to. But the point was that they both sound pretty much exactly the same. And that's because, WAVE is uncompressed, so you have all the data there. And when you do MP3, it's lossy, but it's intelligent enough to take away the data that's not very important. So you can't really notice. But you could probably take it to the extreme, and then you would notice. But later, you can click this link here. And then you can sort of see how they deal with the voice problem, because in MIDI, you can't really have a human voice there. So here's how one creator decided to handle this problem. You might recognize the song. I'm not going to tell you. You guys can do that at home. But moving on to images plus audio equals video. So, that didn't work out too well. So there's a GIF right there, animated. And you can sort of imagine that if you couple it with some music, you can see that it makes sort of like a video. Like if you put those two together, you can have a mini movie. It decided to play before it animated onto the page. So here's the beginning. It's basically this little stick guy who tries to open this door by all sorts of means. If you're an anime fan, you might recognize a lot of, you know, inside jokes here. But yeah, this is just sort of meant to convey that a video file is a container or a collection for other files, sort of like video files plus audio files, maybe subtitle files. Now I see that I've distracted you guys with the little animation. But he's just trying to open the door, which he does open at the end. And he's using all these anime techniques. Transform! No, anyway. Okay, I'm just going to keep talking. Oh, that's my favorite scene. Anyway, a few video compression algorithms, I guess if you want to call that, or I guess they're more like file formats. You have .mov, .mp4. That's more for like QuickTime. They're more or less interchangeable these days, I think. Yeah, it just cycles over and over. So once you've seen it once, you don't need to keep watching. But another type would be .avi. That's my preferred type for movies that are on my laptop, but quality might not be so good. There's also MKV, which I know that this packages also subtitles into, you know, its little video package container. So a lot of anime, if you get it online, you might find it in this format, because they'll have, the anime will be, by anime I mean like Japanese animation, Japanese cartoons, they'll be in, say, Japanese, and the people who distribute it, I guess, they'll have subtitles for you. So that's like .mkv is, they usually have subtitles and things. And then there's also RM, not quite as popular anymore, for real player, real media, real player. And then .wmv, I don't think Dan mentioned this, but I like it because it's for Windows Media and Windows Media Player, which is my favorite, you know, media player. But So if you compress all these files with all these formats, you need some sort of way to like decompress them so that your computer can watch them, right? Or I guess you'll need some way to compress them. So to do this, you would use something called a codec. So sometimes if you have a video file and you're trying to play it and the little like time bar is sliding but you're not seeing anything, that might be because you need a codec. And then how do you find these things? You can probably Google online, or you can ask a friend or two, or you can ask us. We might know, maybe. But yay! So a few more terms pertaining to video, just sort of like a vocab list in case you guys were confused. There's aspect ratio, which is the ratio of the width to the height. So a 4:3 means that if the width is 4 units, then the height is 3 units, like proportionally, I think. The same unit, not like different units. And then another word that might be slightly confusing, encryption. It's pretty much changing the data or putting it in such a form that can't be directly like read correctly. Like you might see bits, you might see the bits and the bytes and all that, but it won't be, see, a text file or a video image that you can play or stuff like that. So an example would be sort of like, say you wanted to encrypt a message to your friend. So yeah, a little thing I used to do when I was a little kid, or we would write, my friends and I would write notes to each other where we would sort of map the alphabet onto a reverse alphabet. So A's would be Z's, B's would be Y's, and that was our little key to encrypt our little notes to each other. That's rudimentary encryption, I guess, if you want to think about it like that. And then FPS, here it means frames per second, or the frequency of new frames, i.e. images, frames or images, that are shown per second. And this is not to be confused with first-person shooter, for those of you who are gamers or have heard me talking about them. Let's talk quickly about the DRM. So this is pretty much has to do with access control by the producers or the distributors or the makers to limit digital data or devices, like the use of digital data and or devices. So basically, they're trying to stop uses or whatever people are doing that is undesired or unintended, that should be unintended, not intended, by the person who provides it. So say I release some piece of data that does this really cool thing and someone else finds another use for it that's not quite what I intended, that would fall under that second bullet there, just to clarify. And another example would be pirating it. Like I'm sure people who put out their files don't want other people to crack the code or whatever and then give their friends free copies. So that would fall under here too. And then a few problems with this. As I said, pirating pretty much is stealing. And there's like copyright laws, international, there's copyright laws here, but like there's also the problem of international law. Like say people are breaking the copyright laws we have here in, I don't know, China or something. How do you deal with that? How do you take care of that? There's a neat little image of back in the day, 1980s, I think, when the British were trying to stop people from taping things at home, or taping cassettes at home, I think. And then here are a few other problems for the person, not the company. Future compatibility. So maybe right now we're using something Or maybe they're using something to encrypt the data so that you can't like make more copies of it. What if in the future they use something else and then you won't be able to access, you know, your older data or your older things? What if they don't support it anymore, support the older versions? That would be bad, because then you can't, like, it's yours, but you can't really use it. And also consumer cost, just adding on these extra protection methods isn't free. They'll probably, you know, add to the price, which in my opinion, software is pretty pricey. But yeah, those are some consumer problems. Yay, and also like property rights. Like, if I buy a game, it's mine, right? Shouldn't I be able to like loan it to a friend? Or, you know, if I buy a car, I can like loan it to my friend. Why not? What? So someone decided to make a parody of this other logo, the real one. And here they're saying that DRM is killing music, and it's a ripoff. I don't know, maybe you guys find it funny, maybe it's not quite so funny, but that's what other people. It's two different views on this DRM, supporting, not supporting. Yay, so for those of you at home, or for you guys later, you can click the link and read the article about the study of Japanese anime getting more sales after it being pirated. That's kind of weird, contradictory in my opinion, but you can read about it. And then yay, my favorite slide, and possibly pretty much the last-ish slide. Gaming shout out. So Dan talked about gaming. I want to add to this. So he sort of said that the characters and the environment, more or less, are sort of built using wireframes. So this sort of outlines their 3D structure, and then they use a texture to fill it in or to sort of wrap around the wireframe. So what this looks like, here's one of my favorite video game characters. Maybe you guys know who he is, but this is sort of his wireframe, his outline, before he gets filled in. And then you do some math, and you sort of smooth out the parts that shouldn't be, like, the parts that should be smooth. And you get this sort of clayish-looking figure. And then you stick the texture on, and he looks OMG real. Well, real in video game terms. Isn't that awesome? I just thought, yeah, this is my favorite video game character of all time. For right now, I don't know, maybe it'll change in, like, 2 weeks when Portal comes out. Or, well, that's, like, half a month or something. Whatever, Portal 2. But yay, this is Leon S. Kennedy from Resident Evil. That's where the font was from, if you guys are still thinking about that. But yay, that was cool. So an equivalent would be sort of a 2D equivalent would sort of be a drawing. For the outline, you can sort of see it here in the hair where there's not a lot of detail. It's just sort of like a blob, a wireframe if you want to think about it like that. And then the texture here, you can see a bit of shading around the eye. I guess it's not really good up there. But yeah, you can sort of think of this in 2D terms as a drawing. Different stages of a drawing. Or in a 3D example would be papercraft. Do you guys know what that is? Well, I'm gonna show you. Okay, if I can get this out right. Okay, so here is Pikachu. He's made totally out of paper. Like, you could totally crush him and I would be upset at you. But here's Pikachu. You guys can like come look at it later, but I haven't glued his head on, so you can totally see the paper. It's entirely made out of paper and glue. So you can totally take a 2D thing and make it 3D. I don't know if Pikachu's gonna sit here, but okay, I guess he can just sit here. But yeah, that's like a 3D example of sort of what they do in video games, I guess. What comes next? So to sort of show you guys that this is sort of, this 3D example with papercraft is sort of like what they do with video games, I want to show you this. Go. Okay. So apparently someone made a Leon S. Kennedy papercraft. I haven't done this yet because it looks very complex with 9 pages. But let me zoom in here. You can sort of see the blue lines as his wireframes. And then you can see the color as his texture. And you can actually make this out of paper. Like, here's all the parts that you'll have to like put together. So apparently this corresponds to his leg. You can sort of click different things and see what you're supposed to make out of them. Let's go back to Leon. And then let's tweak the settings a bit so you can see him better. Let's make this black. See, doesn't that look like Leon? Isn't that awesome? I want to make this. But it would take too much of my time, probably. Someday, I will make Leon. You just wait. I'll bring him to class, too, and be like, yes, guys. Look, guys. Anyway, so that sort of brings us to the end. If you guys want to make Pikachu, I can provide you with the template. It's just this flat piece of paper with color, and then you just fold him up, and then you glue him together. You should probably glue in his head, which I didn't do. But, yay! Thanks for joining us! Sorry that I went over. Hopefully it was fun! Maybe. Well, if you want more fun, here's a bit of news. The Nintendo 3DS is out. It was out yesterday. So this thing is, if you guys know the DS, it's a portable gaming system thing. Handheld game. Yeah, there you go. Yes? Two. So it's a handheld, I guess, gaming system. But the cool thing is you don't need glasses. You just hold it up and you play and it, like, it pops out. It's 3D without the glasses. What? Awesome, you guys should check it out. And then also, one of the video game companies, a PC one, is trying to stop piracy by hiring video game hackers. Because, well, if they're the ones who are hacking their games, if they hire them, then they wouldn't be hacking their games anymore, right? And they would probably be helping prevent all this hacking. So yay! If you guys are interested, you know, do check that out. If I get a 3DS, I'll show you guys, I guess. Not like it's gonna happen, but oh well. Thanks! You guys.